Hello, this is episode 2 of Our Dads Died, which is a podcast about the fact that our dads died. They're dead.
Yeah. they still are, that's the thing, they still are.
Yeah, and for the sake of this podcast, we have to hope that doesn't change.
Yeah, for the sake of this podcast, stay dead. Yeah. Obviously, personally.
Oh, it would be wonderful and confusing.
if your dad faked his death.
Yeah, yeah. I think those would be my two immediate emotions.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful? I'm so confused.
Why?
Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Thank you if you listened last week. We've had some lovely responses to last week's episode, which we might dig into on the outro of this podcast. But the main point now is to introduce this week's podcast. Tom, do you want to tell us who the guest is? Our first guest.
Our first ever guest. We've got Ishan Akbar on, who is, Rich, actually one of your friends. It's kind of bizarre me introing him.
Yeah, good point, actually. I mean, but let's keep going. So what can you tell us about Ishan?
Sure. He's a comedian. He's been on QI.
Yes.
And probably Mock the Week.
Yes. More than once.
More than once. What else do I know about him? Well, I know that he's Muslim, and his experience of death and his experience of what that was like is actually quite different because of the rituals that are observed in that culture. And that's something we really dig into right at the start of this episode, how his lived experience was actually quite different to ours when it came to the funeral.
He's also been on Live at the Apollo. I just know he'd want me to get that in.
Yeah. Brilliant.
But he was a fantastic guest, and this episode is all about the funeral. We'll be back at the end to tell you a little bit more about next week's episode too. But in the meantime, here's Ishan Akbar and his dead mum. You're our first guest who doesn't actually fit in with the title. You don't have a dead dad, unless things have changed drastically since we last spoke.
No, they haven't changed since we last spoke. Good. My dad is very much still knocking about.
Excellent news.
That sounds like I hate him. I don't. But he's
But your mum, I believe, is dead.
Is she? Yeah, she is. She is. My mum passed away. It's interesting, isn't it, the language? Some people say dead, passed away, isn't around anymore. I tend to say passed away. She passed away in 2014. But for all intents and purposes, she dead. She is dead.
But it's funny you said thing about dead or passed away, because I've got a bit of a story on that as well, where someone at work said to me, one of my colleagues, said, I'll care for you kind of thing. I'm just so sorry to hear that your dad's not going to be with you for a little while. I mean, there's a lot to unpack. I think the thing that I dislike the most, other than the idea of meeting him again, was this little while aspect.
Does she believe in an afterlife? Is that where that comes from?
She seems to believe that I've only got a few years left.
Yeah. Your dad's not going to be with you for an incredibly brief time, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
You will see him again very soon if my plan comes together.
It's also very interesting, isn't it, how so much biblical language, or just religious language, because, you know, I was raised in a Muslim family, has entered this kind of the vernacular around death and how people console you. So with Islam, for example, people always say to me, she's in a better place. These people are alive. They're not dead. So they don't know. I don't know what kind of place my mum is. She could have ended up in a one room bedsit in Tottenham Hale. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's true. And that's interesting, the religious aspect, because you grew up in a Muslim family and we're going to sort of talk about funerals today. Mm. How different is a Muslim funeral to sort of your standard Christian?
By the way, can we just address the Eurocentricity of standard funeral versus Muslim funeral?
Yeah, I know. I wasn't going to pick up Rich on that one. I was just like, let's just... It is what it is, like when your grandma says something mildly racist and you go, grandma,
Rich.
It's a different time.
Hey, look, in my day, it was different.
I only went to one standard normal funeral before my mum's, and it was in a church, and there was a coffin that was brought in, and they were playing Treasure by Bruno Mars.
Oh, wow.
That's a choice. That's
an upbeat song. And I quite liked it. There was like a program of events and whatnot. A Muslim funeral. Muslim funerals differ amongst Muslims for a start. But one thing that is consistent is it happens very quickly where possible. So my mum passed away on the Friday and she was buried on Sunday. And possible, she would be buried exactly the same day or the following day.
Jesus, that is a
It's a very tight turnaround. So they kind of, and you know, one thing that I have to say I quite like, in fact, okay, let me talk you through the whole thing from beginning to end.
Yes, please.
Absolutely.
A very important part of the burial is the washing of the body. And this is normally done by people of the same gender in your family. And from all accounts, I didn't see that bit, but from all accounts, it's a very powerful and religious experience because this person's body is being cleansed before the burial. Then it is, it lies in state amongst the women while we're doing the prayers. And then my dad, my brother and I got to walk over to the women's side and, you know, see my mum's body and, you know, give her a kiss on the cheeks and this kind of stuff. And that bit, some parts of Muslim community will say, you can't do that. The men shouldn't be going there at all. They tend to be the more, unsurprisingly, on the extreme wing of Islam. But luckily we had an imam who was like, your mum's dead, your wife's dead. This is a really sad thing for you guys. Whatever the religious explanation of it is, that she's gone to a better place to live the rest of her life, go and see her and give her a kiss, you know? So that was nice. I mean, so much so, my own uncle wanted to stop my dad from going.
Really?
Yeah, my own uncle was a bit like, I don't think you should go, you know, she's...
Because it was against tradition?
Yeah.
Wow.
And my dad, I think, in quite... not as many words, said something like, why don't you suck my dick and fuck off?
Which is, of course, another tradition at the funeral, the sucking of the dick.
And then once that was done, we carried the coffin over to where her grave would be. And this was the bit that was interesting, is when everybody, you know, there's a lot of tears, a lot of crying. When the coffin was laid next to the grave, the imam and my dad asked everybody present, because the women weren't allowed to come to the actual grave itself, but there was like one of those megaphone things, and my dad asked everybody present whether my mum owed them any emotional, financial or social debt. This was something that I remember reading about, but I hadn't quite twigged that it happened in quite such a brutal, open way. Because the idea with Islam is you're not meant to have any debts at all. And even though I have said that to the credit reference agencies, they haven't taken it on board, and I'm taking them to court for being
racist
bastards.
It's a racist country, Sean.
Yes, I know. I was like, look, this, I don't owe £6,000. I'm not allowed to have debt. I'm Muslim. I'm like, no, you definitely owe this money.
But you can guarantee that there are some people who are like, oh, shit, are we in trouble here? Are we allowed to? Yeah. Sorry, I didn't. Oh. You'll have stalled them, definitely.
Anyway, so at that point, what is meant to happen is people are meant to say, oh, and this is the thing, it's interesting, isn't it? Because when you're about to bury someone, you can't go, I gave them a tenner for a couple of beers. Can they?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like...
Well, we're allowed to. It's a little bit uncomfortable, but.
As it happens, no one said that my mum owed them any debt. And then the imam looked at me and my brother and said, right, boys, into the grave you go. And me and my brother were like, what?
What? Yeah, it's a good question.
And they said, he said, well, you two have to lay your mum to rest.
So you had no idea this was going to happen?
No, absolutely none.
Oh, my God.
So it was explained to us that in a traditional Muslim burial, a woman is laid to rest by her closest relatives, whom she cannot marry. So my brother and I, and Richard has met my brother and I in person, we are what Giacomo would call the target audience. Okay?
It's a lovely way of putting it.
Okay.
So immediately we were like, oh, shit. when mum told us to lose weight, maybe this is what she knew was going to happen.
Please slim down for the funeral.
Yeah, no, I did. Like, imagine if you go to a personal trainer, what's your target? Funeral.
I have to be in a grave really soon.
Right. So my brother and I are like, fuck me, this is... Okay, let's see what happens. And this grave is narrow, you know, it's 6 foot deep, and it's like, what, 2-3 foot wide? And we're probably wider than that, I don't know. So I climb in, and then my brother wedges himself next to me. And it's weird. I don't know how you found this with, in terms of your parents, your dad's funerals. You kind of go with the flow without really realizing you're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're very much, I think, particularly with your mum's, because it was two days after she died? So you're still in a haze. So you need to be led. You're not really in a state to be arguing or making decisions, are you? So you just do what you're told.
Exactly. And so we just kind of went with it. It all felt like a bit of a blur, but it's weird how I remember everything completely clearly. And I'll even be able to tell you where certain people were standing. Like, it's so clear. Anyway, so then he told us to hold our arms aloft. And my mum, who was then, I was about to say my mum emerged from the coffin. She didn't emerge from the coffin. She was, that would have been a turn up for the books.
Yeah, wow.
We were like, do you know what? We're here, mum. Might as well finish off the gaff, right?
Yeah.
So she was in a burial shroud and they lowered her onto our arms. So I was holding my mum's head and shoulders. My brother was holding knees and toes. You're welcome. No, I'm joking.
Nice.
Head and shoulders. My brother was holding kind of her hip and her leg. Mm-hmm. And then as they were reciting some prayers, our job was to lower her. What I do remember is my brother and I went in barefoot and we felt the base of the grave, which had sand and soil in it. And it was a very hot day, but the sand and soil was so cool, like we were on a beach in Bali or something. And it was quite powerful feeling a sense of peace and calm, kind of feeling like, if I'm going to lay my mum to rest anywhere, this is a pretty good place. So when we held our mum, I certainly felt this sense of not resigned acceptance, but I'm going to call it resigned satisfaction. I kind of acquiesced to the idea that this was going to be the last time I was going to hold her.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I was very I'm a very tactile guy, as you well know, Richard, much to your dismay sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm quite a tactile guy. So, I always hugged and kissed my mum. We just did this thing. And in that moment between how I was feeling in the bottom of my feet and how I was holding her, it just, I don't want to say it, but it felt right, which is an odd thing to realise, I guess.
Yeah, it's not what you expect to feel at a funeral, is it?
No, and I think this is something that religion does really well, actually, which is that because, you know, there were 560 people at this funeral, and all the men that were there, the way they were reciting and the way the imam was reciting, you kind of get carried away with how powerful a thing it is. I felt this kind of invisible veil of protection from all these men and women who were reciting these prayers that I'd heard as a child, basically preparing my mum for the afterlife. And if there was ever going to be a moment where I was going to go from, you know, alcohol drinking, bacon eating, Jewish women loving apostate to let's bomb some white, no, let's believe in Islam now.
Let's go all in on that.
Yeah, if I was going to become an Allah jockey, that would have been the moment. As it happens, I didn't. I like beer, so.
Yeah. Ah. It was a transient but powerful moment.
Well, yeah, it was a powerful moment, but it didn't work. Sorry, Allah, whatever. So then the guy says, okay, now lower her. Now, here's the thing. My brother and I were, like I said, literally wedged into each other. So there's very limited space. So I'm trying to find the best way to kind of lower my mum's body. Somehow my brother had managed to lower my mum's legs. So then I had to kind of turn and hold my mum's shoulders and head between my legs. I kind of maneuvered. But because you're in the moment, you're not really thinking. I didn't, like, my brain didn't engage the first aid approved way of lowering and lifting heavy objects. So my legs were straight. I lowered myself down. Then I ended up teabagging my mum on her forehead.
Another transient yet powerful moment.
And in the shock of it, I kind of like let go of my mum.
No! Please tell me, oh, this is really important to me, is please tell me you touched her again, because I don't want you to say, and that's the last thing I ever touched my mum with.
I kind of, yeah, kind of through the shroud, like over the shroud, I kind of stroked her head and then touched her cheek. And then we climbed up out of the grave again. And then they do this thing where they have to turn the body to face Mecca.
Mm. And presumably they said to you, you can't go back in, you're banned now. Yeah. We know what you're up to.
Yeah, you are not good at this.
Ishan is too keen to be back in there.
Yeah.
Ishan, put your trousers back on.
Yeah, come on, mate. This is not the time and place. So they turned my mum's body to face Mecca, and they put some planks of wood at a diagonal just to cover her body. And then people come along and get clumps of soil and just throw it into the grave. That's basically it. So it's a very, very involved process for the immediate family.
There's this idea of there's no hierarchy of grief. And I kind of think there definitely is a hierarchy of grief. And it's imperative that we work out where we all fall on the hierarchy. almost like on, if you compare it to Top Gear's, what was it called? Stars in a Reasonably Priced Car.
Yes.
We're going to sort of set our lap time and see if any of our guests can beat it. So just a very quick rundown. For me, lovely middle-class upbringing, parents married, very happy. Then age 24, my dad died overnight. I didn't find out until 6 hours after he died. And that was it. No chance to say goodbye. Gone. Just this fresh, young 24-year-old man living in a one-bedroom flat in Doncaster with no idea what to do with his life. That's my grief story, Tom. Quickly come in with yours, and then we'll see if Ishan can beat it.
Was a child, parents divorced, saw my dad every Saturday for a bit, played football at Whitecliff, which is a park, and had a Burger King. I've gone too deep. I've gone too deep into my childhood. I grew up, adult, dad got cancer, watched him die for 2 years, and then he died, ultimately, as a result of the old cancer there, which was encompassing practically his entire body.
Mm. Nice. Step up to the plate, Ishan Akbar.
Raised in a mixed Pakistani-Bangladeshi household, dad from a decidedly working-class background, mum from a particularly ruling-class black background.
Hello.
Which basically meant that my dad spent all this time trying to earn as much as he can to try and meet my mum's incredibly high expectations of life and society. Despite the poverty, I actually had a very charmed and liberal upbringing, which I really, really enjoyed. My parents would argue often about the lack of money, but would entertain people pretty much every single weekend, which is where the fucking money went. mum and I went to Costco to buy big supplies for another fucking party that we were going to have at the weekend. And then we went to a pub on the way back for some lunch, and then she complained of some back pain, went to hospital that evening. The next morning, I went to work. In fact, at 2 o'clock in the morning, when I was in the hospital, my mum said to me, can you please get the fuck out of my face? You're pissing me off. I was just standing there. So I went home, went to work the next morning. At 10 o'clock, I called my mum. She said, I'm going to be discharged this evening. See you at home tonight. I said, great. And then 3 hours later, my dad called me wailing down the phone saying, I just had to give your mum CPR in the hospital. I don't know what's happened. I don't think she's coming back. And then fast forward to Friday, we turned the machine off, and then I buried her a wedge next to my brother and teabagged her as I buried her on the Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's good.
It's true, I never teabagged my dad. That is a good point. Did you find out how your mum died, ultimately?
It's a weird one. So she had some kidney problems. They'd done dialysis on that, but she had a heart attack, and they kind of got her back, and then somehow she had sepsis of the blood.
God.
So on the death certificate, it says sepsis, but really, no one really knows.
Interesting. That's not that dissimilar to my dad. He died, we eventually found out, of meningococcal septicemia caused by the meningitis virus. Is that a virus? But we initially thought he'd had a heart attack. When I first found out he died earlier that day, I came home from work and got the call, and they thought he just had a heart attack because he was ill that morning, woke up, then was dead. And so it's a similar thing. But what's interesting is that his funeral was actually delayed by a fair while. We didn't bury him for, I think, almost 3 weeks after he died, because he was having a post-mortem to establish why he died.
Right.
But presumably there was no opportunity to do that with your mum. So how?
No, I mean, they were happy, you know, that it was sepsis.
But right.
No, I don't know if I could wait 3 weeks. I think maybe 2 days. I don't know. Is there an optimum time? There is no optimum time, really. But I feel like after 2 days, I can get on with the process of dealing with the fact that she's gone. It seems quite... I don't know. 3 weeks seems like a long time. Maybe.
But from an emotional point of view, that's interesting. Because I kind of liked the fact that there was a break. Because I think... I almost think of that time between the death and the funeral as a bit like that weird time between Christmas and New Year, which it literally was in my dad's case. But
you were just watching loads of reruns of Royal Family.
I was just eating so much turkey curry.
Yeah.
I didn't know what day it was.
It sounds a lot to me like you're saying that that period of time was a bit like half term.
Well, but it was in the same way that period of time, it doesn't really matter what day it is. Everyone's a bit confused. Everyone feels a little bit ill. That's kind of how it felt. There was this sort of hazy period where it didn't really matter if it was the weekend or if it was Wednesday, and you didn't really know what date it was, but you just knew we were moving towards this day. And then when that has happened, then we can start dealing with this. And so it almost felt like sort of suspended reality for a bit. And because there was something to focus on in all the admin that goes into a funeral, we were sorting out, you know, food and where would we have the wake and who was going to come down, who would stay at our house, what music would we play, has everyone got a suit that fits, and all of that stuff. There was stuff to do. And so I think it was only after the funeral, really, that I had that feeling of, oh, this is it then. It's real now. And when all the family go away and everyone's back at work and life just continues for everyone, and you're sort of going back into this life but fundamentally different, and you will be forever. And so I think I quite liked having a buffer period.
Yeah, maybe. It's interesting because I not only did that happen to me, my girlfriend at the time broke up with me 2 weeks after my mum died.
That's a bold move.
Again, under those circumstances, I think there should be legal recourse.
You know what? I'm grateful she did it then, because in the list, in terms of the hierarchy of grief, she didn't matter. You know, you know, we were together on and off for 4 years. She broke up with me 2 weeks after my mum died, and I was a bit like, my body, my mind and my heart is currently consumed by something else.
Mm.
So, and, you know, grief is such an all-encompassing thing that by the time it came to my brain realizing that I no longer had a girlfriend, I was kind of all right with it.
Well, that seems as good a time as any for a quick public service announcement. Meningitis can be a virus or a bacteria, though viral meningitis is the most common.
And that's what it was. I think it was viral meningitis. Actually, on that, while we're discussing the hierarchy of grief, we didn't actually make a definitive decision.
No, we didn't.
I think because you told the story so emotively that my natural instinct, because you're an excellent storyteller, instinctively I would have put you above both of us in the hierarchy.
See, I completely disagree. Come below.
Wow.
I think, you know, it sounds like you had a bit of a blessed childhood. Sounds like everything went. You got in a lot more FaceTime with your dad than I did. And your mum as well, though. That's probably more relevant.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I just think mine was worse. Sorry, mate.
Wait, Tom, how old were you when your dad died? You were 29.
I was also 29.
Oh, okay. So, because I was 24. Oh, I don't know if that makes a difference, but it feels like it should.
Sounded a bit like when you told the story that you were living with your parents at the time. Is that accurate?
Yes.
So a lot of FaceTime with the old mum.
Old mummy. Loads of FaceTime with her.
Sound a lot more than I got my dad.
It's not my fault your parents can't handle a relationship.
And as they told me at the time, it very much is my fault.
Oh, funny.
You brought up funeral music earlier on. And I think funeral music is something which everyone's experienced. Funerals tend to have music, right? Was there music at the funeral?
No, in Muslim funerals, there's none of that. None of that.
It's musicless.
Yeah, completely musicless. And this is a very interesting thing, which is my dad very recently said to me, he went to a funeral of a colleague of his who unfortunately died from the old coronavirus.
It's a strong new rebranding.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Tell you what Corona really needs is a jingle. I think I've always said that.
Yeah. You got to find positivity. My dad went to this funeral and he was really taken by the fact that there was music. They played, I think the guy was a Rolling Stones fan or something, and they played some of his favourite songs. And he did say to me, you know, a Muslim funeral could really do with some beautiful songs, because there's so many beautiful South Asian songs about love, loss and God and devotional music. And I just don't understand why they don't play them. And I said to my dad, would you want that played at your funeral? And he said, yes, but you're not supposed to, right? But it's also weird because Islam keeps telling me, oh, when someone dies, it's a moment of celebration because they get to go to the afterlife where it's fucking banging, baby. It's like Infernos and Croydon. What? Yeah, papa. And it's like, and I'm like, yo, if we're meant to be celebrating this, let's play some certified bangers, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of hypocrisy around funerals in general, because a lot of people will say, oh, it's a celebration of life, it's not a sad occasion, but also everyone there will be sad. So I always think it's quite, I've known people in the past who have said, oh, at my funeral there won't be a sad moment, it'll all be a celebration, everyone's got to wear fancy dress, everyone's got to have a great time. And it's sort of like, well, but they won't, will they? Because they'll be quite sad. What you're doing is you're forcing someone to weep at your graveside feeling awful but dressed as Captain Jack Sparrow, and that's not really fair. That's more for you than it is for them.
Yeah, and that's crying thing. And trying to blow a synthetic wig out of your mouth the whole time.
Exactly. And I think that's the question that is quite difficult with funerals is, do you do the funeral for the person who's dead, or do you do it for the people that are going to be there? And I still don't really know what the correct answer to that is. For instance, at my dad's funeral, we played music, but he died suddenly. He was 55 and we'd never discussed, like, what should we play? And so the playlist was all over the place, if I'm honest. We carried him in the coffin to my brother's suggestion, which was the theme from Gladiator, which when he suggested it, I had to go, you do mean the film Gladiator and not the TV series Gladiators, because that is a very, very different vibe.
You want the chaplain on the mic going, Gladiator ready!
Exactly. You're carrying the coffin in, up the aisle, but stationed on the aisle, Shadow, Hunter, Cobra. You've got to get past them.
And then instead of walking up some steps, there's a travelator just to get the coffin up.
Exactly. So we carried him into the theme from Gladiator, which is a beautiful bit of music, but it's a bit of music that everyone knows, but they don't really know where from. So a lot of people, I think, in the, what do you call it, the audience? In the crowd?
The audience, yeah.
Audience, we'll go with audience. We're kind of like admiring the music, but also going, oh, is that HSBC advert? Where do I... Has anyone got Shazam? Can we Shazam this? And so it was a bit... And then we carried him out to my mum's choice of You'll Never Walk Alone. Because my mum is she's from Liverpool. She's a big Liverpool fan. He was an Aston Villa fan. So it's sort of... Again, okay. It was like... It's not... That's, okay. That's for us, not for him.
Yes, but absolutely.
That was what my mum needed to hear as she was leaving the church. So it's always hard to work out whether you're doing a funeral for the dead person or not.
He was a Villa fan, so I mean, what song are they possibly going to pick? Villa.
that's their big hit, isn't it?
Yeah, that's another one. You know, my funeral was very much for my dad. You know, he had him in the coffin in his Liverpool shirt.
You mean your dad's funeral was very much for your dad? It wasn't your funeral.
If you need, I mean, I like to refer to it as my funeral because I did.
Now I can see why your parents split up.
You know, yeah. They had trouble. There was a lot of that. So he did. Yeah, we played a lot of songs that he liked, like Motown music. So there was a lot of that. Mm. And when we exited, we all exited to Starman by David Bowie. Yes. You know, there's a Starman waiting in the sky.
Yeah, very nice.
Emotive, but like his favourite song.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
All very nice stuff. So mine was definitely for him. But what about your mum's funeral?
Yeah, no music at all.
But was it for her or was it for you?
It was definitely for her. The way everything that happened was to prepare her for this journey of going into the afterlife. I had zero say. I was being told to go into a grave.
True, yeah. It'd be weird if you'd requested that.
Hi, do you mind if I just...
I pop in first. Like when you're buying a car, you know, you're walking around and kicking the
Do you mind
walls,
if I just get the surveyor in just to check the... Thank you. just knocking on the walls of the grave going, interesting. And is there an extension possibility? What are the skulls like around here? in short, it was definitely for my mum.
And then with your dad, who said he... What was it? He said that he would like music at his funeral, but it's not really allowed.
Yeah.
So do you think, would you have the, I don't know, the courage to sort of break those traditions?
Yeah, absolutely.
So would you would plan the funeral and play the music that he wanted?
Yeah, I think what I'd do is have like a memorial service where I could do that for him. Because with... My mum's funeral, we had the funeral, loads of people came around to our house, there was lots of food, people brought food, and there's a 40-day mourning period in Islam.
Right.
And during the 40 days, it said that the angels come and prepare the deceased for their journey for the Day of Judgment. And the suggestion is, you know, you go to the grave every day and, you know, you kind of pray and wish them luck, basically. And... After the 40 days, there'll be another kind of, I wouldn't call it a memorial event, but people come together for the 40th day to do a round of prayers and hope that those prayers reach the deceased. So everything is geared towards preparing this person for the deceased. And there's no real event to remember the person that's gone for me or my brother or my dad to share some words about what we miss about her and who she was and this kind of stuff. So I think that's something that ought to happen, should happen. And this is what, you know, immigration and culture and they mix. And, you know, my dad probably would not have seen such a thing had he not experienced it himself by being in this country in the first place. So for my dad, I think it's something that I think he'd really appreciate, actually, if we were to have a memorial service for him after he died, of course.
Of course. The right way to do it.
What kind of tracks are we talking?
We'd play like classic Bollywood, South India, South Asian music, some Sufi songs.
We all know it.
Yep. Ding a ding a ding a ding a ding a ding. Just as I lower him into the grave.
Just for clarity.
Yeah.
Ishan was doing that, not me or Tom. just need to make that clear.
That was Richard, how rude. And then obviously, as I'm lowering my dad into the grave, instead of lowering him, I'm just lifting my arms up in the air. Ding a ding a ding a ding a ding. Everyone's like, can you put the body down, please? It's going to be a whole thing, you know.
Still got your balls on his head.
Yeah. Just to be clear, people, there's more than just that song in the whole of South Asian music history. So just anyway. So yeah, I'll play some of his favourite Sufi songs, and we'll probably intersperse it with some Western music that means that bit would be for us, I suppose. But I'd probably play the songs that I know that he loves.
It's interesting because I have gone on Wales Online, and they've got a list of the top 10 songs played at funerals in the UK. And this was published days ago. So this is, you know, this is really up to date, I assume. It doesn't say when the list came from.
Should we see if we can name them?
Well, Rich, you've already knocked one of them out.
Starman? No.
Well, you'll never walk alone.
Oh, fucking hell, that song.
Jerry and the Pacemakers. Not only played at Rich's dad's funeral, but also performed in the form of a poem by myself and my brother at my dad's funeral.
Oh yeah, I forgot about this.
Taking interchanging lines.
Nice. Did any of you do it in a Scouse accent?
No. We wore Liverpool shirts with a jacket over the top.
Okay, nice.
Did you really? I didn't know that detail.
Yeah.
What, throughout the ceremony or just for the reading?
The whole thing.
Wow.
Full shirt with a jacket over the top. Much more relaxed.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course. And so when you were reading, sorry, I can never get enough of this story. When you were reading You and Your Brother, You'll Never Walk Alone at your dad's funeral, were you reading it to the rhythm of the song? with
in the same pace. You'll never walk alone.
You may think, Ishan, that's weird that you read words from You'll Never Walk Alone, taking each line each. That's weird. But not quite as weird, I would hazard a guess, as what Rich decided to do at his dad's funeral.
Oh, yes. I wasn't prepared to discuss it, but
well, you have to do.
Yeah, I read from a GCSE biology textbook as my reading, the GCSE bite size revision guide.
Mitochondria is
not far off. Yeah, I read the nitrogen cycle.
Right.
As I said, it was a hazy period between the death and the funeral.
Why?
Why is good?
Yeah,
question.
The question that everyone who gathered there asked afterwards. When I was doing my GCSEs, I struggled with science, and my dad was very good at science, and he would help me revise, and we would go through the GCSE biology revision guide. And so when I was looking for things to read, I looked up like the standard passages that are read at funerals. They're always religious, and he wasn't a religious man. He was a sort of proud atheist. And so none of it made any sense to me. And then I thought, well, the nitrogen cycle is the story of life, basically, of how everything that lives eventually dies and is taken into the soil, and is the nutrients form new life. And I thought it was quite a nice reading for him.
Do you know
I think that got lost in the translation, though.
But do you know what? I like that.
Oh, thank you.
I do. I think that you chose this thing that's important to you and your dad, and you shared this moment. And what's nice about it is it's not glib. It's not, a passage about God or whatever. Had you explained the context the way you've just done to me, so eloquently?
I think not as eloquently.
Or did you just go into it being like, GCSE biology, the nitrogen cycle? And they're like, what the fuck?
The way I hear about how Rich was at the time, it sounds more likely that he got up to the lectern and just went, nitrogen!
I did explain it, and I remember writing a line that even in my grief I thought was very nice. I think I said something along the lines of, as far as me and my dad were both concerned, there is no afterlife, but this is a story of how he can live on. And I think the line was something like, I think he would like to think of himself becoming part of somebody else's garden. because he was into gardening. And I remember writing and being like, God, you are pretty fucking good, actually.
Mate, you should try comedy.
Yeah, and all of my comedy since has been GCSE biology revision guide based.
Love it. Love
Turns out it's quite niche.
It.
Thank you, BBC Bite Size.
What would I read? Do you know what I would read if I were to do, say, my dad's funeral?
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably read out the commentary from the 1992 World Cup final when Pakistan won.
Oh, the Cricket World Cup?
Yeah, the Cricket World Cup.
The whole thing?
Just the moment when Pakistan won it, just in the run-up to it.
Is that a famous bit of commentary, or is it...
Not particularly, but it was such a big moment for my dad, who played cricket for Pakistan at youth level, to watch them win the World Cup. Like, this would be a thing that is important to him, and I would hope, you know, I'd do that. A similar vein. A thing that you shared with your dad. With my mum, it would probably be the list of reasons why she thought I was a failure.
Did she leave a list?
Oh, yeah.
That would be a perfect reading for a funeral.
Wouldn't it?
Imagine that on the back side of the will. Yeah.
There's a picture. Sorry. There's a picture that... I haven't really looked at very many pictures of my mum since she passed away, if any at all. But there's one picture from my graduation. It's a family portrait. And my best friend has just moved into the house. Best friend moving in. And he looks at this picture and he said, Ishan, you look really sad. And I said, well, before that picture was taken, my mum had spent 4 hours crying, screaming, and having a go at me because I got 2-2.
You got a Desmond.
Right? So, yeah, I got a Desmond, right? So I look crestfallen.
Understandably.
My dad's got like a very comforting hand on my shoulder, being like, Sando, I got your back. She's crazy, I know. And my mum just looks so pleased with herself that she's crushed my spirit. And my best friend was like, he hadn't met my mum, and he was like, she sounds insane. You asked earlier, Richard, you know, how you feel, how did you feel? I've not dealt with any of this shit. You've got to be joking me. Have I been to bereavement counselling? No. Did I send my dad and brother? Yes. What do you think I paid £10,000 at Edinburgh for? Fucking hell.
I'm in a similar boat because I think that the initial sort of I've just been hit by a car kind of grief that just knocks you sideways probably lasted for a year and a half, 2 years. And then you sort of get onto an even keel where your life carries on and you're fine, you can function and everything's fine. But yeah, I've definitely got this sense that there is a dam somewhere that is holding back the actual grief that is going to burst at some point and destroy me.
Yeah. The one we were talking about, the vernacular of death, around death, there's one particular phrase actually that I do quite like from Islam, and it's called sabr, and sabr means patience. So often people will say when someone passes away, I hope Allah gives you sabr. I hope Allah gives you patience. And it really is a game of patience. You exist waiting to reconcile your feelings, to let the tears flow, to have a smile about the person that you've lost and you love. The idea of sabr, I think, is quite a nice thing. And it certainly helped me in many ways.
Yeah, that's really nice. I like that idea a lot. The one thing that you mentioned earlier, you said that obviously when your mum died, there was a funeral, but there wasn't a memorial. It was sort of for her, but it wasn't about her.
Mm.
And you said you'd have liked to have had the opportunity to sort of tell stories from her life. Do you know what you would have said?
Oh, that's a very good question. I would have certainly talked about the life that she had, which was so colourful and complicated and difficult and beautiful, that I've been trying to capture it in a novel for a while. I'd talk about the aspects of her personality which became synonymous with who my mum was. The fact that she was loud, the fact that she would feed everybody, the fact that she was very straight talking. And I just talk about, I guess, you know, when people die, their legacy lives on in us. And it sounds kind of cheesy. It sounds like a Scrubs line or something, but I am you two are, irrespective of whether you spent much time with them or not, with your parents. We are the product of their existence and their chromosomes and their thoughts and their feelings. And it's no surprise that as you get older, people will say to you, oh, you do the same thing your dad did, or you do the same thing your mum did. And I am here, certainly in my mum's case, because of her and how she raised me to be. So if you have any grievances with me, take it up with her, but she's dead, sorry. But I'd talk about those things, and I'd celebrate just how insane she was. I remember one occasion where I was coming home from work, and I live at number 15 is where my house is, and the side of the road I enter from is where number one starts. And as I entered the road, I could hear my mum screaming at my brother. She was upstairs screaming at him for not doing the hoovering.
Window open or
window
closed?
Open, just screaming okay. at the top of her lungs. I came home and I said, Mum, I could hear you at the end of the street. You were screaming so loud. And she goes, was I? Watch me. And then she started walking out of the house and saying, I'm going to scream at the end of this road so everyone can hear me. Fine.
Oh, boy. I mean, that's the kind of level-headed personality you want in a courtroom.
Exactly.
Oh, you think he did this murder, did you? Oh, yeah. You're going to get it now, Justice
what,
Edie.
What was great, though, is her lecturer actually wrote, I set up a kind of website for people to paste their memories of my mum, and her lecturer very kindly wrote something, and she said she was, in the classroom, the best at getting a very incisive argument across. And it didn't surprise me at all, because that's what she did with me. Nothing would bypass this woman. And she was able to unpick people in the most brutal way. It was, that's the way she dealt with racism. It's the way she dealt with an abusive ex-husband. It's the way she just dealt with life. So, yeah, I'd talk about that kind of stuff.
There is one other thing I wanted to talk about the funeral, because I was talking to my mum on the phone the other day.
All right. We've all got mums, mate. You know.
Yeah, sorry. Well, you know, come on this podcast. And she did say something really interesting that happened at the funeral, which I wasn't aware of. The funeral was a bit oversubscribed. There were hundreds of people, and we were sat in the basically front row. And my mum, obviously my parents separated.
Sorry,
so
imagine if you
couldn't
get front row seats at your dad's funeral.
Ah, can you? You know, it'd be a bit of a heartbreaker. Well, this is the thing, though. This is very relevant, because you see, because it was oversubscribed, the people at the back, as they came in, because there was nowhere for them to sit, they ended up at the front, like behind the coffin and the, you know, lectern, the person talking. So it was almost like they were on stage.
What, like theatre in the round?
Yeah. And because my mum was, you know, they'd split up years ago, she was basically one of the last people to enter, which meant that, conversely, she ended up standing right in front of me throughout the entire thing, which was absolutely bizarre. Anyway, it's relevant because when we all got up to left, of course, you know, we were the first people to go. Starman plays and we're out the door. But everyone's leaving. And it turns out that my mum, one of the last people to leave, decided to, like, put her hand on the coffin, sort of do, like, you know, a goodbye thing and touch it. And she didn't realise there was a step. And she, like, fell into it.
Great.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
The coffin, according to her, started wobbling. And came, like, this close to sliding onto the floor.
Great. Brilliant.
So that would have been wonderful. It's like, I never thought their divorce was that had that much sort of disrespect and hate in it, but it turns out she really wanted to get the last laugh.
Yeah.
And this leads me to a question that I've never thought about before, but do they lock the coffin? You hear about putting nails in the coffin. Do they actually, is that sealed shut, or had she knocked it over, could he have come tumbling out?
Depends on the coffin, because you can get coffins which just open the face and chest.
I mean, no, but the thing is, you do get a choice of coffin.
Yeah, of course you do.
And when the funeral director comes round, you know, they're getting money off of this, they try and upsell you.
Oh yeah, coffins are expensive, and that's the thing. A lot of this is all sort of unnecessary, because if you like I do, and it obviously depends on what you believe, but I don't care what happens at my funeral. If I die, wrap me in a tarpaulin, pop me in a skip. I don't, like, it doesn't matter in the slightest. Kick me into a canal. I won't.
That's
know.
An episode of Bargain Hunters I want to watch. It turned Richard into a lamp. He's upside down. Oh, Richard.
That would be wonderful.
Upcycled. It
turned him into a smelly lamp.
Upcycled. I've said that I want to be not embalmed, like taxidermied.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What pose would you go
like
for?
Like in a pose that's grandiose, maybe holding a mic or something, just being like, remember this? And like placed on the driveway on my house so people know that I lived here.
So people know. Some people, when they get really famous, they get blue plaques. But you're like, I've got a better
fuck
idea.
The plaque. Who's reading the plaque? I want pigeons to shit on me and dogs to piss on me. That's what I want.
Yeah, but when you die, what do you want?
Hey!
I like the idea of being taxidermied, though.
Yeah.
Do you know what's weird, though, is that I immediately imagined you nude when you said that.
In the teabag position, presumably, just squatting down.
I think more people should get taxidermied. I really do think this.
And then how many generations does your taxidermy body get passed down? Until, because if that starts now, say you've got kids, then you've got grandkids and great-grandkids, and they're inheriting not just you, but your kids and their kids. And so, like, in 4 generations' time, they're like, well, I need a bigger house because I've got the stuffed bodies of 4 generations of my family.
You want every generation to be better than the previous one. So, you know, I'm expecting that they're going to. And if they can't, then they've let the whole generation of the Akbars down.
All right. I think we're ready for one of the final parts of this, which is talking about attendance. You see, that is the question for me. Because I would say, roughly, we're talking about a couple of hundred people at my dad's funeral. Rich?
Well, and I know that you're going to kick up a fuss, because you always do when I mention this. My mum swears that there were more than 900 people at my dad's funeral.
The silence was deafening. Fair enough.
Where was it held? The Palladium? I mean, 900 people. That's a sellout at half the London theatres.
Yeah,
like,
there were.
Come on, mate.
There were ticket touts outside. A lot of people got turned away.
Yeah. People were getting it on today ticks. So, Ishan, you have 2 numbers. You have a couple of hundred to about 300 people for my dad's funeral, and you have an invented number.
Yes. Mine was somewhere in the middle. So we had about 550, 570 at my mum's. And what happened is, the cemetery, the mosque had run out of space, so people were praying in the car park, and cars had blocked up the surrounding areas. It was in a beautiful part of Essex called Hainault. So because it was a Sunday evening, police turned up because they thought there was some sort of riot happening. They didn't understand why there were so many cars, and then they saw the funeral stuff happening.
Oh, wow.
So, there's a lot
so you had a police presence?
We did. But, you know, 550 people with kind of it was one day's notice because I announced the funeral on the Saturday.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. That really blows Tom out of the water.
You can already see how his figures are being massaged. He's counting the police in the attendance figures. No. He's probably counting the nearby houses. I mean, it's nonsense, you know.
None of them. It was the only brown people there in Essex were there for my mum's funeral. And there were fucking tons of them. So many, mate. This country's gone to the dogs, I tell you.
One day I'm going to get the attendance figures for my dad's funeral, and I'm going to urge you, Rich. I want to see evidence, hard evidence, because it's not true.
Well, allegedly there's a book of condolence, which is where that figure has come from, that there were 900 entries.
How many of them suggests, are going to have the same handwriting?
Well, yeah, and also that suggests that there was more than 900 because one person will write on behalf of the family. You're not going to get... So
I think
your dad's funeral had about 1,500 people.
Yeah, by the end of the series, his dad's funeral would have been setting up Wembley Arena. That's what we
At the minute, he was essentially a third-tier football
Your
team.
Your dad's funeral was the away allocation at Old Trafford.
And we played You'll Never Walk Alone. They hated it.
That was great.
What's sad about it is that if it is true, it is still the biggest audience I've ever played in front of, and probably will be for my entire career.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there it is. I mean, what a cracking episode. Ishan Akbar, hilarious guy, really, really funny moments, the stuff he talked about, especially in terms of, you know, the touching his mum with a particular body part, which is funny, but the serious counterbalance to that of, it's literally 2 days after she's died, and he's being told, without knowing ahead of time, hey, you've got to touch and handle the body and stand in the grave. I mean, it's brilliant that he can find a funny way to talk about that, which really tells you all you need to know about this podcast.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what an awful, awful experience.
Yeah, it must have been absolutely harrowing. And, I mean, what I found harrowing about listening to that episode is that my dad's funeral does remain 2 years on the biggest audience I've ever played in front of, which is it's sad in its own way, isn't it?
What is the biggest audience you've ever played in front of?
Comedy wise, or
well, it's not funeral wise.
Yeah.
All the funeral gigs you've been taking on.
Yeah, I did Michael Jackson's funeral, which was huge. No, it's probably 300.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a real number, I'm assuming. That's not an invented number.
How dare you? And I mean, to be fair, I have massaged the figures a little bit there. Probably
okay, 300. It's also not a real number. Yeah. It's such a round number, isn't it? It's hard for that to be so accurate. Yeah.
But thank you very, very much to Ishan for coming on. If you liked him, if you liked what he did there, which I'm sure you did. He is, I mean, he's everywhere. He's, as we've said, he's been on multiple BBC shows. He's also in the next series of Sex Education on Netflix, which we should have mentioned in the intro. And he's got his own podcast. So if you like his style of podcasting, listen to Shame is Delicious, which is a podcast he does with Darren Harriott, and it's very, very funny.
Well, one thing we promised we would do in the intro is we would get into some of these brilliant comments we've had.
Yes.
If you pop onto Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review and leave a review, we will read some of them out as the shows go on. So we're going to get into a couple of them now, Rich.
Absolutely. It's genuinely been really quite touching and emotional to see that it's kind of meant something to people, which is really nice. And it's what we hoped for, but you're never sure if it will. We've had some lovely messages. This was from Fizz Janie on Apple Podcasts, I believe.
They're all on Apple Podcasts.
They're all on Apple Podcasts, but I say it each time.
That's where you've got to leave the 5-star review, is
yes,
Apple Podcasts.
Please do leave 5 stars there. And say something maybe along the lines of, as a fully paid member of the Dead Dad Club and mum to 2 young new members, this has made me laugh out loud. Which is a good end to that sentence, because there is a lot of information in there, and that is a lot of loss in one sentence.
It's a roller coaster of a sentence.
It really is. Fizz said, already looking forward to next week's instalment. Thank you for making humour a normal part of grief. You're very welcome, Fizz, and thank you very much for listening. Sorry for your loss, of course, your multiple losses, and I'm glad that listening to this has maybe helped in some way.
Yeah. What a lovely message. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you for continuing to do so. From Pigeon, trying to find the funny side in an event as traumatic as the passing of a close relative sounds like an impossible mission. But this podcast does exactly that. From the clumsy reactions of friends to the surprising effect of grief on bowel movements, Rich. Tom and Rich find a lot of humour in the rarely discussed absurdities of losing a loved one. They're also very open with each other and unflinching in discussing some deeply personal and heart-wrenching details. So the show can go from belly laugh to gut punch pretty fast. But those serious parts feel important, because from the anecdotes they tell, a lot of us clearly don't really know what to do when either we or someone important to us loses a close relative. I'm subscribed, and looking forward to the future episodes. Thank you. I'm looking forward to you looking forward to the future episodes. I'm very, very pleased that we have yet another subscriber to add to our burgeoning fan base,
Rich. Yeah, that, and that's a lovely message as well to receive. One of the things that has struck me in the week since we released the last episode was that everybody who has responded to the bit about bowel movements has said that didn't happen to them. So I think I need to call a doctor. Even my mum, who I spoke about on the podcast, when I saw her, she was like, I don't remember that. I think that might have just been you.
Well, maybe it's a sort of PTSD related thing. Like it's such a traumatic experience. What? The deaf end. That, you know, you sort of, it's like pregnancy. You actually forget the pain
of the many, many poos that you do. Anyway, we spent enough time on poos.
Let's have one last review. Message.
Yes. Yeah. From BennyBen121. Poignant in the right places and explored in a way that breaks the stigma of talking about the death of a loved one. The guys are great at drawing on their experiences in a humorous way. Thank you very much. Relatable if you've ever lost someone, and helpful if someone close to you has. I wish I'd had a Hitchhiker's Guide to What to Do If Your Friend's Parent Dies when I was younger. Which is great. Thank you very much for that message. And again, hopefully this will help in some way for some people. The other thing that listening to reactions to the first podcast and listening to it myself that I thought is, we make a lot of jokes about things like, you know, sending the wrong kind of message or bringing round too many casseroles, but anything is better than nothing. I think that also needs to be clear, that if someone that you know is going through it, do something, bring a casserole. The casseroles are genuinely great. They're funny, and the messages are funny, but something is better than nothing. That would be my...
Yeah, you said it. You said it on the episode, and I listened back to it again, and I really agree with you. You know, any kind of physical action, verbal action in real life, saying, I've heard this thing has happened, and I'm really sorry, it sounds awful.
Yeah.
Is a meaningful thing to receive. We may laugh about it, because it's an awkward thing for people to experience, but it is still a nice thing, even if it is a bit awkward.
Yeah.
I've had several messages from people since saying they're concerned that they may have been one of the friends who sent the awkward text on the day. I can assuage your fears. Nobody yet who has messaged me did send one of the awkward texts. So you're all in the clear for now. But hopefully more people, you know, do please keep getting in touch. We have Apple Podcasts up here. 5-star reviews galore. Please keep adding them. Give us a review. And in your review, do share an experience, something that you've experienced. And we'll read that out on the episode and talk about it as well. And that's not the only way that you can get in touch.
Yes, you can also get in touch with us via email. OurDadsDiedPod@gmail.com, which is the best way to send us if you've got quite a long story you want to tell. We've had a couple of really nice emails this week. We're saving them up for a one-off episode where we're going to go through the correspondence that we've had, because I don't think there's enough time to do justice to some of the stories. So we'll be doing a special episode of those later on, which Tom has come up with a great title for.
Yeah, this is Our Dad's Died, and that episode will be Your Dad's Died.
Very good.
So if your dad, mum, family member, friend, really, if you've experienced loss and you'd like to discuss it, particularly if there is something in there which made you laugh, we're here to assuage you and say that's allowed. Obviously, we think that's allowed because we deal with it by laughing. Do share that, and then we'll talk about it, and we'll probably have a laugh as well with you. Which would be nice.
Yeah. And then the last thing that I'll say that again, because I just did a weird snort at the start of that sentence.
Mm.
and then the last thing to say is that next week's episode is quite timely. It's our Father's Day episode, because next weekend, and you probably already know this if you're listening to this podcast, but next weekend is Father's Day.
Yep. It's so, you know, we've been dealing with that. We'll discuss all the emails that you might get, all the reminders in public life about Father's Day. Father's Day doesn't stop just because your dad did. And we'll talk about our dads and you know, how we try to cope with Father's Day ourselves. And, you know, if there's any tips we might have that might make it a bit better for you.
For some reason, you saying Father's Day doesn't stop just because your dad did. I really like the idea of that's how you refer to death. My dad stopped.
He had sort of had enough.
I'm afraid to say your dad has stopped, and there are no signs he'll be restarting anytime soon.
He stopped, man. That's it. You control out and delete all you like. He stopped. So please do, you know, get in touch with us there, and of course follow us on Twitter at Our Dads Died. We'll also be posting on Instagram, so you can find us there with the same handle.
Yes.
Too. So there's nothing else for us to say other than, you know, I'm Tom, he's Rich. Thank you so much for listening and join us next week.
See you in a week. Bye bye. We love you.
Great.
Make that noise at the end. That's good.